Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on social media on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369, the place to do that. Drop your voicemails, your text messages, anything you got for us, we will make sure to get to that on Mailbag next week. We'd love to hear from you, though. 331-979-1369 is the place to hit us up. Back here on Friday's episode of Locked On Bulls. Didn't publish an episode yesterday, but more than enough content out there for this week. We had the Rose documentary, we had whether or not the Bulls should sign Rose this summer, whether that's a good idea or not, and what's the reality of them doing that? So that was Tuesday's episode. We went through an hour of mailbag questions, all voicemails on Wednesday's episode. So if you didn't listen to any of those, go ahead and catch up on those. But we more than made up for having a day off yesterday. We have a phenomenal interview with Mark Schanowski from NBC Sports. He does pre and post game for the Chicago Bulls all 82 games. So we got to talk to him, and he also hosts the Bulls Talk podcast on NBC Sports Chicago. Interesting enough, he just had Jim Boylan on not too long ago, and so we talked to him about his experience with Jim Boylan, what he thought about that interview, and also some X's and O's on top of draft talk and free agency this summer, what he thinks about the main pieces of this rebuild, and a whole ton more. So Mark Schanowski is our guest today on Locked On Bulls. Without further ado, here he is, Mark Schanowski.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome to Locked On Bulls for the first time, and I can't believe it took us this long. He is a Chicago sports broadcasting legend going on close to, 30 years now? Not to make him feel too old as we welcome him in. He is a guy that I am very fortunate to have been able to work with this season, a guy who very graciously put up with the antics of myself, Big Dave, and John Sabine over at NBC Sports Chicago. He is Mark Schanowski, host of Bulls pre- and post-game live, as well as host of that Bulls Talk podcast, which you should be catching all of their episodes that they'll be doing throughout the offseason. Mark, welcome to the pod, man. How you doing?
Matt, Jordan, thanks for having me. Matt, it was great working with you guys throughout the season. Bulls Outsiders added a lot of fresh, great addition to our Bulls coverage team, and it was fun getting to know you guys. We look forward to doing it again next year.
Yeah, well, that's the hope, crossing our fingers and waiting for Bulldog to call us in for that season post-mortem meeting. Speaking of which, before we get too serious, how's the past week of your life been since our final 82nd Bulls game of the season? Things a little less stressful for you?
Well, there wasn't much stress in covering the Bulls this year, obviously. We kind of knew what the outcome was going to be on most nights. And late in the year, when they were running out those lineups of G League guys and deep NBA reserves, you know, they really had next to no chance to win. So the season kind of disintegrated into, you know, the realization that this wasn't going to be anything that anyone was really looking forward to late in the year. And now the real work begins, because, you know, looking ahead to the draft and free agency and what possible combinations they can put together, there are a lot of different ways that this could unfold. And, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about that over the next half hour or so and see what the best options are, because really it all depends on how the lottery combinations go on May 14th. If you get the first pick and get Zion, then you can go one direction. And if you don't, then you probably draft a point guard and go a different way. So there's a lot of things that could happen, but the bottom line is this is 2 years in a row they've been heavily affected by injuries. That has to change next year if they're going to make any kind of significant jump.
Yeah, we'll definitely jump into some of these offseason storylines as we move along here. But I wanted to start, Mark, with Jim Boylan, because as Bulls fans who didn't jump ship were sitting there watching, as you mentioned, all these G League players, maybe the one entertaining part, and regardless of whether or not you believe in him as this team's coach moving forward, at least Jim Boylan had some pretty interesting and entertaining sound bites on a nightly basis. You just had a nice sit-down conversation with Jim Boylan for your Bulls Talk pod recently, like I want to say last week. And I'm curious, what is your biggest takeaway from that conversation you had with him? Because the guy is such an interesting guy. You know, Big Dave and I had a chance to talk with him at that Bulls charity event, and I walked away saying, man, I really didn't want to like Jim Boylan, but I really like Jim Boylan. Not to say that I think he's the right man for the job, but I really like Jim Boylan. What did you take away first and foremost from your conversation with him recently?
You know, you mentioned the fact that you ran into Jim at the ping pong event that the Bulls put on. And as we were miking up and getting ready to do the interview, that's one of the first things he mentioned, what good guys you were and how he enjoyed meeting you. So I thought I'd pass that along. You guys made a good impression on the coach. And, you know, the thing is, we laughed at times in some of the sound bites that we heard, the Bulls across the chest. When you play with a pure heart, things are going to work out for you. Spirit and soul and toughness and all the rest of that stuff. So there were a lot of buzzwords and catchphrases that he had. And I think for most people, especially the more casual fan, they probably feel like, well, that's just coaching talk. That he doesn't really mean a lot of that stuff. And that's just kind of a rah-rah, more of a high school or college mentality. But when you talk to him for a span of time, you realize that that's who he is. I mean, the guy is genuine in terms of, you know, the amount of work, the passion that he has for the organization. You know, this is his first chance after being, and he was a head coach at Utah on the college level, but he was never an NBA head coach. This is his first chance, and he wants to make the most of it. He wants to do everything he possibly can to ensure that at some point he will be a successful NBA head coach and he'll have a long run in Chicago. So even though some of the things he says come off as a bit corny, that's who he is. This isn't an act. This isn't some kind of coach persona he's trying to put on. That's who Jim Boylan is, and I think as Bulls fans get to see him throughout the summer and throughout a training camp, I think they'll realize that the guy knows basketball, and like most coaches in the NBA, his wins or losses are going to be largely dependent on the quality of the roster that the front office can put together. You know, I don't want to discount the importance of coaching in the NBA, but really, more than probably any sport that we watch, it's a players' league, and if you don't have the players that can win games, there's really not too much a coach can do.
I think it's interesting that you bring up the fact that, you know, the quality of coaching in the league is obviously excellent. And I'm curious, besides all the buzzwords that are talked about, you know, the quotes that people use on radio, and we use them here on the podcast too, and the things that people want to kind of laugh at, but I'm curious to get your perspective on, what do you think he is as an NBA coach? What do you think his biggest strength is as an NBA coach? And where do you see a lot of the weaknesses as an NBA coach, and where he needs to kind of grow after his first season? And I know this season was kind of all over the place with all the injuries. And then that last month of March was really hard to understand what Jim Boylan could be as a coach. But as far as his X's and O's game, what do you think about that and how it can grow next year?
Well, I think that's still unfolding. I don't think we have a really good grasp about what exactly he wants to do in terms of his offensive and defensive systems. He did an extended interview with Darnell Mayberry for The Athletic when they went through some of the X's and O's, and you get the feeling that he would like to be a defense-first coach, the guy that he knows they can get stops on one end, which will trigger their fast break on the other. Initially, when he took over, you know, he kind of scaled back everything. He said, we're going to walk before we can run, and they were literally walking the ball up court after a made basket, and at times, you know, it was kind of tedious to watch. The players, I think, felt a little bit restricted in terms of not being able to showcase their talents. But as the season went along, as he saw what he could do with this roster, when he talked to Doug Collins and John Paxson and other people that he trusted, I think he realized he had to open up the offense to have a chance to compete in the NBA. I think at his core, he's a defense-first guy. I think he does respect the value of getting post touches and running offense off your bigs, even whether it's in the low post or whether it's in the pinch post. I think he's going to be a guy that wants to get, you know, Wendell Carter Jr. will be back next year. I think they're going to run a lot of offense through him because he's a pretty good passer. I think that they're going to try to get more baskets in transition if they have a point guard who can push the ball more consistently than Chris Dunn did the last couple of years. And I think basically he's a matchup kind of guy like most NBA coaches are. They try to exploit the weak matchup out there and go to it over and over again. And I think some of the things we saw with Lauri Markkanen in February, where he was allowed to, you know, initiate fast breaks, where he was allowed to kind of create in half court sets. I think we're going to see more of that. I don't think Boylan is going to be as rigid as some people thought when he first took over from Fred. I think that he is going to have some willingness to take input from his players, take input from the front office and other coaches around the league that he knows and figure out the best way to attack NBA defenses. I think that we're going to see that, you know, this is a guy that's going to be meticulously prepared. He's going to put in the time to make sure his players are going to be in the best possible situation. And it's really a question of just if this team can stay healthy and develop, I think we'll see some serious progression in the next year.
What's up, Locked On Bulls Nation? Matt here with a message from Wyze. Wyze is the indoor camera that does it all. Wyze is packed with premium features that allows you to see everything from anywhere for only $20. It has 1080p full HD picture quality, images so clear you won't miss a single thing. Also a night vision feature and two-way audio. Wyze's mission is to bring amazing smart home products accessible to everyone. You can check on your home anytime with Wyze's app's live stream. Connect with life as it unfolds in sharp focus. And that includes live streaming with an 8x digital zoom. The possibilities and uses for Wyze Cam are endless. Yes, it can serve as a great nanny cam for all of you parents out there. But what about bachelors like me? Sitting in the living room watching the game, you got dinner cooking on the stove, and you don't want to go back and forth between the living room and the kitchen 10 times during the game just to check on dinner. Put a Wyze Cam on your coffee table, bam, you can keep an eye on whatever's simmering on that stove of yours without having to bother to get up and go to and from the kitchen while the game is on. That's my kind of product right there, improving my quality of life as a sports fan. And for just $10 more, Wyze Cam Pan gives you 360-degree coverage in under 3 seconds. And here's the best part. Not only does it work with your mobile phone from anywhere, it also is compatible with Alexa. For all of you in-home smart speaker users out there, like me, Wyze Cam compatible with Alexa. Boom. This product is amazing. Go to Wyze.com, that's Wyze.com/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price on your Wyze Cam today. That's Wyze.com, Wyze/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price. Life moves fast. Your in-home camera should too.
We're talking with Mark Schanowski here on Locked On Bulls. By the way, you should follow Mark on Twitter if you aren't already, at Mark Schanowski. Mark, on the lines of Jim Boylan and what to expect and hopefully the ways we can see him improve as a head coach, it's not just about X's and O's, as we know. And I think one of the reasons that Fred Hoiberg got ousted is because Fred failed repeatedly to do the other really big important part of being an NBA head coach, which is managing and controlling various players' egos and keeping a healthy locker room. And certainly John Paxson seems to believe in Boylan's ability to do that, even if it was, as both of those men admitted as the season came to an end, a rocky start, to say the least. I thought the most interesting part of your conversation with Joe Cowley recently on your Bulls Talk pod was when you guys were talking about what changed with that relationship between Jim Boylan and perhaps the most important player on this roster, Zach LaVine, in a lot of ways, when LaVine and Boylan first were really butting heads, and then something changed and something came around. And Cowley said that he thought it was really a big factor was the Otto Porter Jr. trade. And it was about Zach LaVine looking around and saying, all right, am I the face of this team? And how much money am I making versus how much money are these people making? And that Jabari Parker, who was actually the highest paid player on the team before being traded, was indifferent, was not trying to listen to Fred and not trying to listen to Jim. And so Zach kind of followed that lead to say, like, all right, well, if Jabari can get away with this, then I can get away with doing whatever the hell I want to do.
But then Otto comes in. He's a respected veteran around the league. He's got a higher paying contract than LaVine. And then that had an effect on the way that LaVine looked at the coach and how he needed to maybe respect him a little bit more. What did you think about those comments from Cowley? Because I had not really thought about that angle before. And do you really believe that Boylan and Zach LaVine are now on the same page?
Yeah, you know, I didn't really buy everything Joe was selling with that statement. You know, the fact that Otto Porter came in and bumped LaVine down to the second highest paid player on the team, or actually third, he would have been. No, he would have been second because Jabari was traded. So, you know, I don't know if necessarily that he just looked at a guy who's making more money than him and was willing to buy into what Jim Boylan was offering, that would mean that Zach would automatically fall in line. Zach's his own man. He's a headstrong guy. You know, he wants to be the man in Chicago. You know, I've had a chance to interview him on a few occasions, and he knows all about the history of Chicago basketball. He knows that the United Center is the house that Jordan built. He knows this is a big market with opportunities out, you know, off the basketball court, that if he can lead the Bulls back to the playoffs, back to being a contender in the Eastern Conference, he's going to be a big name around the league. So Zach has a lot of things that he wants to achieve in his career on an individual level. I will buy the fact that Jabari kind of dragged him down. It's kind of weird that even, you know, 3 months after Jabari's gone, we're still talking about him, you know, that he had that kind of influence on Zach. Zach did mention in passing that he tried to recruit Jabari to come here, which I think $20 million was reason enough for Jabari to come home. But Zach did mention that he put a phone call into Jabari and said that he should come and join the Bulls because they have something good going here. So, you know, maybe it was the fact that Jabari fell out of the rotation, was unhappy, and he was kind of spewing all those thoughts on Zach that kind of pulled Zach down into his own personal morass. But I just feel like, you know, Zach was, as I mentioned in the pod, that he was just despondent in December and January and early February, where, you know, you'd see him in post-game interviews and his head was down and his shoulders were drooped, and he's like, something's got to change around here. And for a guy that, you know, worked so hard to come back from the ACL surgery, that he was playing some really good basketball, especially on the offensive end, and yet he saw no path for this team to be successful. I think when Porter came in, they went 6-4 after he arrived. I think that lifted Zach's spirits to think that, hey, maybe we have a chance here, and maybe it's up to me to buy in and do some of the things that Jim Boylan and the new coaching staff is trying to get me to do in terms of being more of a facilitator, avoid taking low percentage shots, and you know, be more focused on the defensive end. I think he realizes now, and he said so in his comments before the last home game of the season, that the only way he's going to achieve his individual goals as if the team has some success. I think that's where the buy-in came. I think that in terms of his relationship with Jim Boylan, yes, it's better. You know, he made the gesture to try to pay for Boylan's fine after he was ejected from the game against the Clippers. I think that was a sign that, you know, kind of an olive branch that, coach, I'm with you. But, you know, Zach is a guy that is always going to be kind of a wild colt that any coach is going to have to work hard to maintain a relationship and make sure that he's going to be a buy-in guy, because as young as this team is, whether he likes it or not, Zach's going to be a leader and other guys are going to be watching what he does. So I would kind of categorize that as maybe a work in progress, but I do give Boylan credit for going to the extent he did to try to win Zach over.
I think that's very interesting what you said about Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker, and it can even go beyond that. You know, it feels like, and maybe you can take this into your personal life, anybody out there listening to this too, is sometimes when you get stuck in such a negative situation or a dysfunctional situation for a long time, and those influences around you kind of, if it's negative, they suppress you a little bit. And if you surround yourself with positive people, it seems like a lot of people get uplifted. So that's interesting that you said that. I want to go back to a comment that you had made about Boylan and specifically the X's and O's. I'm very curious, what do you think about Wendell Carter Jr. and what he's going to do in year two and maybe how Boylan is going to use him? Because we saw a fraction of what Wendell Carter can do in Boylan's system, but I don't think we really got an idea of how Boylan wants to use Carter. So what do you see in year two? And is it going to be more of an opening it up and having him more comfortable on the offensive end because they kind of want to play inside out? Do you think he's going to struggle at all too, as far as like kind of taking over that role for Robin Lopez and how good he's been at the end of this year? Just very curious overall what you think he's going to do with Wendell Carter Jr. in year two.
Well, it's a huge challenge for Jim Boylan because Rolo and Wendell Carter Jr. are exact opposites in terms of what they bring to the table. Wendell is a very good player in terms of pick and roll coverage, being able to switch out onto smaller players. He's a good rim protector who can block shots. He's a good help defender. And Rolo is none of that. Rolo's your old school 7 foot block of granite in the post. You know, he's going to play physical defense. He's going to get some rebounds and block shots just from positioning. And he showed us a nice array of low post moves, which we never thought he had. I mean, a guy in his 11th season all of a sudden turning into Kevin McHale was remarkable to watch. Yeah, I couldn't believe that he was able to score at will like he did. I think some of that was it was late season basketball. Teams, you know, obviously looking at a automatic W against the Bulls and really not preparing for what Rolo had brought to the table. I don't think he could sustain that over an 82 game schedule. And you know, we can talk about it later, but I'm not sure that he's going to be back with the Bulls next season for a couple of different reasons. But back to your original question about Carter. He was such a reluctant shooter as a rookie. There were times where he would catch the ball with his back to the basket, you know, at the free throw line extended. All he had to do was turn around. He'd have a wide open 15-footer. He wouldn't even look at the basket. He would just move the ball on to the next guy in the sequence. I think that, you know, I know that Jim is going to visit with each one of his players personally. He's going to get to know them a little bit better. He's going to break down tape with them. I think one of the things he's going to show Wendell is, look at, you've got to be at least a threat on the offensive end so that teams know they have to honor you and they have to guard you. He has a nice touch in the low post. You know, he's able to shoot that little jump hook with either hand. He's got a soft touch from 15 to 18 feet, and he even knocked down some threes during his rookie season. I think he can be at least an above-average offensive player if he gets in his mind that's part of who I need to be as an NBA player. I have to be a threat on the offensive end. I think how Boylan will use him initially, I think you'll see a lot of him at the high post where they run screens off of him, where they run different actions where he's going to start a play from the high post. I don't think they're going to put him down on the low block with his back to the basket and say, go to work. I don't think that's who he's going to be about. I think his primary value, he just turned 20 earlier this week. I think they're going to look at him primarily as a guy who can be a rim protector, who's good in pick and roll coverage, and who can anchor their defense. And I think they're just going to let the offense flow naturally, because right now they've got three guys who are going to be primary options on the offensive end. And if they draft a John Morant or a Darius Garland, you're going to have another guy who's going to want the ball. So he's going to have to get most of his opportunities off the offensive glass, off pick and roll situations. And I think he's fine with that.
Mark, because you know, we're talking about where Wendell fits in year two. And one of the things that, unfortunately, because of all these injuries, we didn't really see because Lowry started the season on an injury and then there was very little overlap before Wendell went down, is how Lowry and Wendell played together. And I think that that's kind of one of the big question marks that fans have right now is this our front court of the future? And then when we heard John Paxson talk about where, you know, where the development of this young core goes from here, and certain, you know, areas of the roster that need to be addressed, he did mention the idea that Bulls fans have been aware of and seen little glimpses of at times, which is Lowry playing a small ball five, shifting Otto Porter to the four, and then playing kind of like, you know, three guards along with those couple of guys. That, of course, would leave Wendell as an odd man out of a potential starting lineup where you're starting Lowry at the five. What do you see Lowry's potential as a guy to play that position in today's ever-growing positionless NBA? Do you think that can happen? And if so, do you see Wendell taking a lesser role than he was as a de facto starter this season?
Well, I'll tell you a story from a couple of seasons ago when Fred Hoiberg was still the coach, and I happened to run into Jim Boylan. You know, the assistant coaches are always warming up players, doing individual work with some of the guys who are deep reserves on the roster, you know, before a home game. And I just happened to walk past Boylan in the hallway, and this was during Lowry's rookie year, later in the season, February or March. And, you know, we're just talking about Lowry and how, you know, he's got a great future as a 7-footer who's got a versatile skill set. And he said to me, you know, I think that this guy could be our starting center. He's got a lot of potential where he could take advantage of mismatches. And this was when Jim was the assistant head coach, and he was just volunteering this on his own. So you know that when he took the head coaching position, that's something that he thought about right away, that, you know, I can use this guy at center, whether it's as a starting center or in closing lineups. And if the Bulls are lucky enough to strike gold and get the first pick and get Zion Williamson, you might see that on opening night where Lowry's starting at center and Zion Williamson is at the four. So, you know, there's all kinds of possibilities. That's why I mentioned it's going to be a fascinating offseason to see how all this shakes out. Lowry right now, I think all the work he did in the weight room last offseason, he lost when he hurt his elbow. He wasn't able to sustain that. And as we saw, he had the health scare late in the season where he had the rapid heartbeat and the extreme fatigue. I think right now he's got to get back in the weight room, get back to working on his strength so that he can hold his own in the post. We've seen instances with Lowry where in switches, smaller guards get on him in the post and they push him. They are able to root him out of the block. So he's got to work on his base. He's got to get a stronger core so that he can hold position. I would be concerned about him. You know, you're playing against the Sixers and him trying to guard Joel Embiid in the post or Karl Anthony Towns or Jokic or three or four other guys where they would just be too strong for him physically. I think you have to be careful in using that lineup. I would be reluctant to see them start with Lowry at center. I think you could do it in certain situations, in certain closing lineups, you could go that way if you're trying to come from behind. But I think that a steady diet of Lowry at center might not be the best option.
While we're on the front court, I want to kind of transition to the offseason. You had mentioned real quick that you don't think Robin Lopez is going to be back. So let's just say, for instance, Robin Lopez is out of the picture. He signed somewhere else. Do you have anybody in mind as far as who you would like to see be added to this Bulls team? Who can have an impact? Because for me, in terms of guys in that front court, I would rather see them spend the majority of their money in fixing the point guard problem first and finding maybe a guy that's a value that can play maybe the four and the five in a limited role off the bench. Is there anybody out there right now that's going to be a free agent this summer or anybody that's going to be on the peripheral, maybe even traded, that you'd like to see added if Robin Lopez is gone?
Taj Gibson. That's my guy. You know, he was fantastic during his time here. He can play both positions. Obviously, he doesn't give you the three-point shooting that I think the Bulls might like to have in a reserve big. But, you know, John Paxson said repeatedly in his end of the season news conference, they want quality veterans, tough-minded guys who can teach this young roster what it takes to be successful in the NBA. You know, Taj had a very lucrative two-year contract from Tom Thibodeau, 2 years, $28 million, and he's heading into the free agent market. He's probably 33 or 34 and he probably only has a couple of years left, but I know he loved his time in Chicago. He's told people that he wouldn't mind coming back. I think that he would be an excellent guy in terms of being a mentor to the young guys. And also, he can still play. He can give you value at both the four and the five positions. Right now, they don't have a backup to Lowry at the four position. And I think if they go point guard in the draft, I wouldn't mind seeing Taj come in here at all. Let's say they have $20 million in cap space. If you gave $8 to Taj and $12 to a veteran point guard, I'd be fine with that.
Well, now let's get to point guard moves for the offseason, Mark. And let's start with this just so we can get Kendall's insanity out of the way. Kendall's been harping on me all season long. Jordan and I just dedicated our first two episodes this week to talking about first the Rose documentary, our reactions to that, and then our reaction to this growing trend among this Bulls fan base that just refuses to let Derrick Rose die in the metaphorical. I am staunchly against the idea. I think Jordan is maybe a little more open to it if the circumstances are right. Because we do know the point guard situation needs to be addressed. There are plenty of potential fits for free agents at that position. But let's just start with Rose because, of course, this city is nuts over this guy. What's your take on Rose? Not just what it might do as far as a media frenzy effect, but his actual fit on the court. Because I also think that he's not even a great fit for this roster right now. What do you think?
Well, you know, we've talked about it many times back in the green room watching the games, and Kendall's really over the top with his fascination with Derrick Rose. At first I thought, you know, we've talked about this for a few years, and at first I thought he was kidding. I remember the day that Rose was traded to the Knicks. We called Kendall in. We scrambled him in for extended coverage. We must have been on the air for about an hour talking about this. And you know how it goes when you're talking for a long time. Opinions start out one way, and they start to get more entrenched the more you talk. And by the time we were done, we were saying, how could the Bulls trade Derrick Rose? He's a Chicago legend, and, you know, they should have just let him play out his contract. And, you know, there were all kinds of different Rose sentiments that were expressed. And, you know, anybody who followed the guy, it was such a fantastic story, and we don't have to rehash the whole thing, but just a you know, a sports tragedy that he wasn't able to accomplish his goals in Chicago because of the way he started. But getting back to where he might fit, Matt, I'm not 100% against the idea. I think that if they used him in the role he played for the Timberwolves as a spot player, as a scoring reserve point guard, I think he could be dynamite. I think if you played him in short spurts and with the idea that he's not coming back to be the former league MVP and the savior, he's not coming back to be the starter, he's coming back to be a Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford type guy who can give you instant offense off the bench, I think that could work out really well. So I would do it if you drafted a Morant or a Garland and you said, this is our guy. Let's say you trade Chris Dunn and you're looking for a veteran backup. I think Rose could work.
You're dead to me, Mark.
See, I knew that you're very entrenched on that position, and you know, that's fine. I mean, that's what we're here to do, is talk sports and hash it all out. But I think he could be dynamite as a sixth man for the Bulls.
Mark, I think the idea of if the Bulls are lucky enough to get Ja Morant, I think that could be something special. Like, you think about what he can do, and, you know, I hate to just slap the mentor tag on every guy that we think is a mentor. You know, I like to hear it from other players that he's played with. And that's not just specifically Derrick Rose, but anybody that you're trying to figure out if they're actually a good veteran mentor. But I really like that idea that you brought up a few months ago, and I think it was around the trade deadline or even before that. You said if the Bulls draft Ja Morant, why can't Derrick Rose be sort of that mentor for him? But I'm curious about all the other point guard options that are out there this summer, because there is plenty of them. Patrick Beverley's been the hot name. I don't know if he's going to leave that Clippers team. Like, now that we see what they're doing in the playoffs and the run that they went on the last month and a half, for me, it's really hard to believe that he leaves there unless you overpay him. Is there any other options out there that the Bulls could entertain, and with the $20 million in cap that they have? And also on top of that, what do you think about the other three point guards the Bulls currently have under contract? Dunn, Archie's going to be a restricted free agent, and then also, of course, Shaq Harrison, too. All-encompassing, what do you think of that whole group and how the Bulls are going to try to attack that this summer?
Well, as we discussed on the Bulls Talk podcast, Joe Colley and I think the Bulls are ready to move on from Chris Dunn. It's not a personal thing. I know that they appreciate him as a person, and you know what his work ethic and the things that he's tried to accomplish here. I just feel like they look at the roster and he doesn't fit with what they've got going on. You know, as a point guard, you have to be able to accomplish at least one or two things on the offensive end. You either have to be a good spot-up three-point shooter, either have to be able to get into the paint consistently and be able to finish at the rim, or you have to be a master facilitator. And I don't know that he's any of those three. So I just feel like, you know, he's got 1 year left on his rookie deal. There is a scenario where he could come back as a backup, but I just don't think he's going to be the starter on opening night of the 2019-20 season. I just feel like they're looking for a better option there. So you start with the draft. If they pick second, they'll take Ja Morant, and they'll be thrilled, and they'll build around him. I think he'll be your starter from day one. If they pick in the 4 through 6 range, I would not be surprised at all to see them take Darius Garland. Now, granted, none of us know much about him other than clips we've seen from him on various media services where, you know, he looks like he's a guy who can shoot off the dribble, who can be a good push guard in transition. And I've heard comparisons to Kyrie Irving in terms of his handles and his ability to come up with creative finishes at the rim. He had the meniscus tear after 4 games at Vanderbilt. So anytime, you know, a 19-year-old athlete has a knee injury, that's a red flag. So you worry about that. But you know, it's a meniscus. It's not an ACL. You hope that he can come back 100% from that. They may even consider a Kobe White if they fall all the way to 8, God forbid. He's a guy that came on strong late in the year, has good positional size at 6'5", but, you know, I don't think he would be in the elite prospect category. So if you get a rookie point guard, if you trade Chris Dunn, I think then you're going to be looking for a veteran. And right now we're doing a video series for our digital platforms at NBC Sports Chicago. We've already done one on Patrick Beverley, the one that came out today on Ricky Rubio. I think Beverley could work because they're looking, as I mentioned, for when I talked about Taj Gibson, a guy who a no-nonsense, tough-minded guy. We've seen in this series where he's volunteered to guard Kevin Durant, which didn't go well last night, by the way. You know, he's a guy that would bring that Norm Van Leer-type mentality to Chicago in terms of defense first, get up in your face, and probably hold teammates accountable when they're not playing as hard as he is. Beverly, I think, would work in certain circumstances, but I don't think he would be the ideal option because he brings very little offense to the table. When you go down the list of other guys that have been mentioned, Ricky Rubio, Darren Collison, I know Joe Colley threw out Corey Joseph and Ish Smith. You know, these are guys that all have their warts. They all bring something to the table, but they're not, they wouldn't be ideal options as a starting point guard for a team that you're trying to build into eventually a championship contender. I think it's a vast unknown. As far as, you know, you mentioned the other guys, Archie Diacono and Shaq Harrison, I think those guys are possible guys on the roster next season as a third point guard, but I don't think either one of them would have a prominent role in the rotation next season.
I'm very sad Darius Garland didn't end up choosing Indiana as his school to go. Instead, he went to Vanderbilt. He was down to the last five. But I'm curious about Chris Dunn. What do you think then, if the Bulls are going to move on from him, what do you think his trade value is this summer?
Very little. You know, it's unfortunate because he was the fifth pick in the draft, All-American player at Providence. The Bulls were trying to swing a deal on draft night in 2016 to acquire him then. They backed away from a possible deal with Boston, which would have sent Jimmy Butler over there, and they decided to give it one more year. And then the next year, of course, they did pull the trigger on Jimmy, and Chris Dunn was a big piece of that. You know, people talked about, well, they got Markin and Levine. Chris Dunn was a key factor in that trade. The Bulls front office felt very highly about him, and they really wanted to make sure he was part of any deal that Butler was involved in. It, you know, as I mentioned, it hasn't really worked out. I think when you look at what you could get for him, I think it would be something where maybe you trade him for another player of a similar salary who hasn't quite worked out in his situation with another team. Or, you know, maybe you get a late first-round draft pick from a team that's looking to add point guard depth. I don't think his value is real high. As I mentioned, he has another guaranteed year left on his rookie deal. He could come back, especially if they get the number one pick, they draft Zion, and they bring in a veteran point guard. Maybe they would just go let him and that vet and Chris Dunn go at it for the starting job during training camp.
Mark, a lot of Bulls fans right now, because we have reached the end of the season mercifully, and now are getting ready for this next exciting part where Bulls fans get a little bit reinvigorated and start talking about all these different, you know, draft options and not just players to choose from, but potential draft night trades, which, you know, are always exciting and fun to talk about. And talking about Chris Dunn and his trade value or lack thereof, I've started to see a lot of Bulls fans talking about, well, maybe you could deal Chris Dunn on draft night and also trade down if you don't love any of the picks, if, say, the Bulls do land outside the top two, which are pretty automatic in Zion and Ja Morant. But you know, as much as this fan base likes to talk about, oh, this ownership group and front office totally overvalues their talent all the time, and I have Bulls fans proposing trades to me, it's like, oh, well, just trade Dunn and the number four pick to the Lakers for Lonzo and the number 11 pick. And I'm like, on what planet are you living right now? Like,
I've seen a ton of that. That's just not realistic. I mean, the Lakers, you know, they played their best basketball when Lonzo Ball was healthy and out on the court. They're not looking to move off Lonzo Ball, certainly not to move up from 11 to 4. That you're right. That's just not realistic.
It's insanity to me, but, you know, and so that's one of them. I know a lot of Bulls fans are really interested in Lonzo, and we've heard some rumors recently that the Bulls and Lakers were even in talks about a Lonzo trade before the KCP trade fell through, and then the Bulls turned around and found out that Otto was available and went that direction instead. But a couple other names, veterans on huge contracts, Mike Conley in Memphis, they might look to be tearing things apart. If they do actually deal AD away from the Pelicans, they might also look to deal Drew Holiday, another big name on a big contract. Just between the idea of adding a veteran point guard that way, or even a young prospect point guard like Lonzo Ball, who's still on the rookie deal, and doing so because the Bulls don't love where they are in the draft and trying to facilitate a trade that way. A, do you think it's realistic? And B, would you like to see them try and execute a deal to add a point guard that way?
I think they have to look at all options and figure out what the best possibilities are for them. you know, the reality of it is this is pretty much a two-player draft in terms of guys who that I think the consensus is could be franchise changers. That's Zion and Ja Morant. After that, all these players bring something to the table, but they all have their weaknesses. And I don't think anybody's looking at anyone, you know, 3 through 14 and going, oh, that guy's going to be the difference. He's going to be a multiple-time All-Star, and he's going to help us, you know, have a plus 10 in wins next season. I don't think anybody's looking at R.J. Barrett or anybody after that as guys who are going to be franchise changers. So if you could move down and pick up a point guard that way by or just trading your pick with Dunn and trying to get a point guard that way, I'd be fine with that. I would never bring on a guy like Conley or Kyle Lowry who make exorbitant money. That doesn't make sense from where the Bulls are right now. They're in a situation where I think their best course of action is to draft a young point guard, get a veteran backup in free agency, and then probably move on from Chris Dunn. Because if Chris Dunn isn't starting, or at least isn't the number two guy getting meaningful minutes, he's going to be unhappy, and I think that's just something that they don't need right now. If they've decided that this isn't going to work out with Chris Dunn, I think the best course for both parties would be to make a deal and move forward with one or two new players. I think that it's, you know, I keep saying unless they get number one, but that really predicates the whole offseason. Unless they get number one, I think they're going to draft a point guard, and I think the dominoes will fall after that.
It's very interesting, and I think it's still fine. Matt and I find ourselves, it's very difficult to talk about some of the moves that the Bulls are going to make because you still hold out a decent hope, and I'm doing every superstition I can, knock on wood, whatever you think of. To me, though, there's still, like, you can still hold out hope for the number one or the number two pick, and they still got 12.5% chance of getting that number one pick. So it's kind of hard to line up these moves for the offseason and tell people a certain plan or what you think they're going to do without that pick. And that pick is really important, I think, to this summer. Mark, I wanted to get your thoughts, though, on there's a video that came out yesterday or the day before, and it's by Seth Rosenthal. He did about a 15-minute video for SB Nation, and he does the series called Collapse. And it's basically talking about all these kind of devastating moments in sports history. And he did a really interesting one on the Bulls a couple days ago and talking about the years after the dynasty, that second three-peat, just going through Tim Floyd's era and the dysfunction of those few years of the Bulls. And for a younger audience, and even for myself, who's a relatively younger Bulls fan, what's a highlight, I guess, or a low light from that era? And what do you kind of remember from that post dynasty? And how does it compare to this rebuild? I think a lot of people kind of want to make that comparison, but for everybody that lived through and remembers it vividly, I just hear people say that was 10 times worse than what this is right now. So what's kind of your perspective of looking back at the post dynasty era and also this rebuild and how those two kind of compare?
Yeah, I think you really understated that, Jordan. It was about a million times worse than what we're going through right now. I mean, you know, anyone who was there covering the Jordan era and the six championships and the excitement and the worldwide interest in the Chicago Bulls, then to go immediately into being the worst team in the league with one of the most nondescript rosters you'd ever want to see. Remember, after the 98 championship, they had the work stoppage, so the season didn't start until January. And there was a little bit game of cat and mouse about, was Jordan going to retire and would he come back to the Bulls? And that kind of got stretched out until he finally, you know, announced, I think, in December that he was going to retire again. You know, the roster that they put together was so bad, it defies description, you know. And the funny thing, this is interesting, I don't know if a lot of people are aware of this, at the beginning of the lockout-shortened 99 season, the public address announcer, I forget if it was Ray Clay or Tommy Edwards at that point, was saying, and now the starting lineup for your world champion Chicago Bulls. And then they would proceed to announce, you know, Cornell David and Mark Bryant and all these clowns that they were running out there. I think about 6 or 7 games into the season, they told the public address guy, don't say your world champion Bulls. This isn't that. So they literally stopped saying your world champion Chicago Bulls because it was such a joke. You know, you had Tim Floyd on the sidelines. I think they still had Tony Kukoc and Bill Wennington and Randy Brown. I think Ron Harper played 1 year. And it was, God bless those guys for having to endure that. But it was just unbelievable to take a team that had accomplished what that Bulls team did. And Jerry Krause couldn't wait to prove that he could rebuild – you know, into another championship team. So, you know, Phil was gone, the assistants were gone, and, you know, they did sign and trades to move Scotty to Houston, and Steve Kerr got his money down in, where do you go, Phoenix or Portland. Judd Bushler got paid by somebody. Yeah, it was just so depressing, and it lasted for multiple years until they mercifully pulled the plug on Tim Floyd and started to build it back up. It was I can't even describe how bad it was to go to those games. Back then, I wasn't doing pre and post, so I didn't have to deal with it on a daily basis. But it was awful. You know, this year in this rebuild, you know, it's been painful, and this year especially so, because we thought they'd show some growth, and then all the injuries just torpedoed the season. But you know, you look at it, and I know sometimes we get caught in a recency bias or get too excited about young players, but you do feel like that Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine are, you know, fringe all-star type players in the Eastern Conference. Wendell Carter, who just turned 20, has got a lot of potential, and Otto Porter looks like he's a good fit with this group. So, you know, they're pretty far along in terms of putting together a competitive roster. Now you just got to sort out the point guard situation and strengthen the bench, and if luck breaks your way, you could do all that in one off season. So I think even though these last couple of years have been painful, especially for those of us who talk about it on a daily basis, they're in pretty good shape in terms of being able to turn around pretty quickly right now.
I like that. Let's end on that note of positivity. Let's not go overboard and start talking 50 wins like our pal C. Red Fred. Mark, did you hear about that? Speaking of, I think Jordan and I are going to get C. Red Fred on our pod again sometime soon. But did you hear that we officially got the green light for Matt versus Fred episode Outsiders?
Oh, that'd be fantastic. I can't wait to see that. You know, and I love Fred. I love his optimism. But, you know, some of his predictions and calculations are just so off the wall, it's almost laughable. But I do appreciate his enthusiasm and his optimism. It's just sometimes you got to rein it on in.
Yeah, I know. It's, you know, but the thing is, I think he provides a service that a lot of Bulls fans need, because we can't all be, whether you call it pessimist or realist, you know, we can't all be like me. I'm too young to be as cynical as I am, but I guess that, you know, you know very well what that's like, not just covering this rebuild, but as we were talking about earlier, the Eddie Robinson and Marcus Fizer of the early aughts. So,
well, the problem with all this is, you know, we see it in every sport where a guy gets drafted high, he comes up and he has, you know, initial success, and we're forecasting, this is where Fred falls into a trap. He's like, all right, so the guy averaged 10 points and 5 rebounds this year. Well, next year he's going to average 18 and 10. It doesn't work that way. I mean, right. You know, as we're taping this, I'm watching the Cubs, and you think about, you know, all the guys that they thought were going to automatically make this steady progression. You know, Kyle Schwarber was going to be great, and Addison Russell, and Wilson Contreras, and on down the line. And so many of them hit roadblocks because, as Theo loves to say, you know, development isn't linear, and it works that way in the NBA too. So just because a guy has an initial start, you can't project him to be an all-star 2 years down the road. We wish it would work that way, but unfortunately, if it worked that way, I think the Sacramento Kings and the old LA Clippers would have multiple banners from all the young players that didn't work out.
Yeah, well, you know, who knows, maybe we'll be here a year from now talking about how Denzel won most improved player of the year. You know, it's all,
I would be happy to do that. I'd say the odds are pretty extreme, but I would be happy to have that conversation.
Yeah, me too.
Let's not fret about free agency, right? As we heard the, you know, the man John Paxson himself say, well, we're essentially adding 2 free agents this offseason with Denzel Valentine and Chandler Hutchison getting healthy. So
right
there are levels of insane optimism even beyond what C. Red Fred touts on Facebook every day. Mark, we really enjoyed chatting with
Stacey
you, buddy.
Stacey calls Chandler young Pip, so we got that to look
young
forward
Pip.
To.
Young Pip, yeah. We gotta tell Stacey to knock that off. We gotta tell Kendall to shut up about Derrick Rose. We've got a long to-do list of bringing people back to reality this offseason.
Well, it's going to be fun, though. This should be a really fun offseason. I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Absolutely,
we appreciate you coming on.
It's been really fun working with you this season. Enjoy some of your time of not watching the Bulls, and I'll see you lottery party night, May 14th. Right, you guys are going to be there.
Yes, May 14th at the Public House. Tickets are still available, so make your plans, make your reservations, and Ryan Archidiacono is going to join us. I won't tell him that I don't know if he'll be back. We'll have fun with him, and it'll be a fun time. And then he could be back. Right. I think there could be a role for him.
He's got great spirit. Hey, he's got great energy.
I was going to say, Jordan's on the money. He's a boiling guy.
And he's got great hair, too. So
that's true.
Underestimate that.
Oh, the hair. All right. Well, before that lottery party, which y'all should definitely come out for, catch Mark as the host of the Bulls Talk podcast. You can find that at NBCSportsChicago.com/podcast. Also, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, all those places. And look for his written content on NBC Sports Chicago as well. Follow him on Twitter at Mark Schanowski. Mark, thanks for your time, buddy. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
It was a blast. Thanks. Looking forward to the 14th, Matt.
All right. Take care, Mark.
Thanks, Mark. Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you again to first-time guest Mark Schanowski from NBC Sports Chicago. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Schanowski. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. I'm the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line. What'd you think about the interview? What do you think about some of the things that Mark had said about free agency and the draft? We'd love to hear from you, so give us your reaction at 331-979-1369. Matt and I have a lot of things set up for the next couple of weeks, so continue to follow us all off-season long, 5 episodes a week. Make sure you're smashing that subscribe button, too. You got Himalaya, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. Anywhere you get your podcasts, I promise you we will be there. So go ahead and subscribe so you get our episodes as soon as they drop. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, and our guest Mark Schanowski, we are out of here, Bulls Nation. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan, Matt, and Mark Schanowski, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com